Good morning and welcome to Finding Your Way Home. My name is Sherry Doherty and I have the host every Monday at 10 a.m. of welcoming you to the world of real estate. Today, I have another guest in studio with me that I'm very excited to share with you all her wisdom. I have Haley Clements with me. She is from IG Wealth Management and she's going to chat with us a little bit about being first-time homebuyers. Welcome to the studio, Haley.
Thank you, Sherry. Thanks for having me on this morning.
It's going to be really fun. Can you tell people a little bit more about yourself, how long you've been doing this, what makes you excited about it, and your company name, all the things that you're able and willing to share?
For sure, yeah. So I've been at IG for 2 years now. That's the length of time I've been in the industry. Came fresh out of school. I was at Trent in Peterborough, originally here from Kingston, and I moved back when I finished my undergrad. I specialized in finance, and I took a BBA. It's funny, while I was there, I took some accounting courses, which I didn't really like, but got introduced to finance and financial planning and really took a liking to it and knew that that's what I kind of wanted to do for the rest of my life, which is kind of crazy at such a young age. But no, really passionate about it. Like I said, been in the industry for 2 years. Know it's what I want to do for the rest of my life, which is awesome and really cool that I can help make a difference in people's lives.
Right. And in your home community, which
of course
I think is amazing. And yes, just a little bit of a backstory. I met Haley actually at a speed networking group, which is fantastic for any of the entrepreneurs in Kingston who are ever interested. Please look up the speed networking. I think we're on a summer hiatus, but basically just like it sounds, it's like speed dating and you rotate from table to table with 10-minute conversations and exchange business cards. And it's really interesting because when Haley and I connected, we didn't want to stop talking. We're like, this is a connection. But what I love most about her is she is very young, but she is very focused and very certain about what she wants to do and how she wants to serve our community. And I love that. There's just a bright light in her and I admire it and respect it. And of course, just being kind of, I have the need to mother everyone. I feel like I just want to help her in that. Thus is one of the reasons that I've invited to be with her on the show today. I also, you know, immediately after that, we said, well, we have to connect and we have to continue this conversation. So we met for breakfast and we met in Odessa. We actually both live in that direction and yep, we met at, I think, the Jiffy Grill in Odessa, had a lovely breakfast, and there's lots of secret places around town and the outskirts that people just don't know about, but that's really great. So shout out to the Jiffy Grill in Odessa as well. That said, that is why I wanted to share her wisdom and her passion with everybody today, because she really is a bright light and she's very ambitious and she has lots to share that people should be listening to. So we're going to jump right in and we're going to talk about first-time homebuyers. So Haley, if you will, when you're working with first-time homebuyers, what's the very first thing you want them thinking about before they even start house hunting?
Yeah, great question. Very first thing I encourage people to think about is their overall financial picture. Obviously, as a financial advisor, that's going to be my first little piece of advice. You don't want to be too focused on the house itself right away. So what that means is really understanding how much money is coming in and out, looking at your cash flow, your debt, what that looks like, and then basically your lifestyle and how you want to maintain that. Buying a home can be really exciting, but it's also a long-term commitment, right? So having the clarity up front helps make the experience a far more positive one and a little bit less stressful, which is great. I often meet people who start with listings, but then we take a step back and we look at the numbers first and they feel a lot more confident moving forward. So typically we do something like a pre-approval as a first step.
That makes perfect sense. It's interesting because just making the base mortgage payment sometimes is manageable, but people neglect to remember property taxes,
yep,
and house maintenance, and in some cases, condo fees and home insurance and electricity, hydro, TV, internet, all the things that go along with it. Yep. So it sounds all well and good to say maybe my mortgage payment is only going to be $1,500 a month. But when you add that all in, suddenly up, you're at $2,500, $2,700. And sometimes that turns your financial picture upside down. So you need some good advice from someone like Haley. A lot of young people are feeling like they're behind when it comes to buying a home. From your perspective, is that actually true?
Yeah, I hear that feeling a lot, and it's completely understandable. Sometimes I feel it myself, but I don't think most people are actually behind. I think it's the landscape has changed. Home prices, interest rates, student debt, general costs of living, they're all very different than the previous generation. So when we compare ourselves to, let's say, our parents, it's not a fair comparison. I also think between things like social media and then old benchmarks, and when we look at people and should they be able to buy a home or not, it feels like a lot of people are maybe ahead, even when that's really not the case. The truth is there's not one right timeline anymore, I would say. Most people buy in their 20s, or some people, sorry, buy in their 20s, and some buy in their 30s or 40s. And everyone's path is just entirely different. What really matters more than the timeline is whether you're making progress that fits your life. Are you able to save consistently, managing your debt well, and having a plan that really feels realistic to you? That's what actually sets people apart from success. From success in the long run.
You're absolutely correct. So there are statistics floating around that say the first time home buyer was, you know, 20 years ago, you know, late 20s. First time home buyer was 27, and now it is something like 43. There has been a significant jump because of the changes in the economy. Our children, my children personally tease me all the time saying, well, sorry, we couldn't buy a house for $6,000 down, which is, I think, what my husband and I put down on our first house was $6,000. The other statistic is, though, that there's, again, don't quote me, but something like 80% of first-time home buyers under the age of Monday morning. It is Monday morning. Are only able to do so because of a family gift.
Yep.
So their parents are saying, here's $100,000. We're going to help you get into your first home. Yep. Or they get an early inheritance. So sometimes living grandparents or the living generation above them will give them a living gift. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the most significant ways people are able to get in earlier, which, you know, if you're blessed to be in that sort of family situation, that's great. But that's not happening to everyone.
Yeah.
And so some people just have to save it all by themselves. So people should not feel like they're behind. Much like Haley said, whatever your personal timeline is what matters most to you. And some people actually don't even desire to own a home. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that we touch on this show quite frequently is most people assume people want to own a home. And it's a great life strategy and financial strategy. You have a solid asset, but it's not for everyone. And there are other ways to make money in other investment vehicles. And, you know, rent sometimes is the easier way, where you let somebody else worry about the property tax and the home maintenance and the new roof and the new furnace it's going to ultimately need. And you just pay them a rent check, and that is their problem. So there's nothing, you know, that's just a different strategy, which is also a good strategy. So moving on, people often focus on what they're approved for rather than what they can afford. Can you explain the difference?
Yeah, it's a very important distinction. When looking at a mortgage approval, it really tells you the maximum that a lender is willing to offer you so what you can actually borrow, but it's not always what's comfortable for your day-to-day life. True affordability is considering things like childcare if you have kids, or travel. You don't want to stop going on the yearly trip that maybe you go on. Retirement savings are important to still consider. You have to think about emergencies, especially when you're buying a home, like I said, or like you've touched on, Cherry, and just enjoying your life. I typically encourage people to build in breathing room rather than stretching to the limit, kind of like what we talked about there. Thinking about new expenses that come up with owning a home, like furnishings, property taxes, bills. Again, we've all touched on these things. Other things like life insurance to cover mortgage debt. These are all unexpected costs or things that are additions once you do purchase a home, and you really do have to think about that.
100%. And I mean, there are sacrifices. I know when we bought our first home, we didn't have an annual vacation. Yeah. There are just some things that have to go a few years because suddenly you need, you know, a new lawnmower, or you need a new hot water tank. Or I'm using these examples because they're things that have come up recently in my house. So maybe you're foregoing a vacation because you need to invest in a new furnace or a new air pump or something like that. And so, yeah, life is continuing to happen, but you have to be really careful about your ratio of housing costs to life expenses. Mm-hmm. How much right now do first-time buyers realistically need to save just beyond the down payment?
Yeah, good question. So closing costs are often overlooked, things like the legal fees, so land transfer taxes, inspections, moving costs. As a general rule of thumb, many buyers should plan to have an additional 2% to 4% of the purchase price set aside for these kinds of costs. It really does depend on the property and the location. Beyond that, one piece of advice we like to give clients typically is whether they're renting or buying, it's important to have a cash reserve or an emergency fund and have that built up. Ideally, that's about 3 months of their income or monthly rental expenses or living expenses, 3 months of that as well. It's good to have that kind of safe and accessible in case of an emergency comes up. And yeah, that buffer becomes especially important once you own a home because, like you said, repair costs, so furnace, things like that, hot water tank that might go. You don't really plan for those and they're unexpected. And it's good to have that buffer there and the money available in case you do need to pull from it.
Yeah, absolutely. In my world, our hot water tank blew up 3 days before Christmas, which was 10 days before our daughter's wedding.
Oh,
so do you not think we were at the most expensive time in our life when we were 3 days before Christmas and 10 days before our daughter's wedding?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's what lines of credit are for too, but that's bad financial advice. So Haley didn't say that. Sherry said that. Okay, there is a lot of talk about programs like the FHSA, RRSP Homebuyers Plan, and the other incentives. How should people think about these without getting overwhelmed?
Yeah, so really great question. Again, these are our tools. These are our friends, not our enemies. It's good to really know and just have the distinction between the two and know how they work and how they're most suitable for you because they both do work quite differently. Typically, the clients that I work with, kind of first thing we take a look at is the first home savings account. So the FHSA, like you mentioned there, they designed it in spring of 2023, and it's specifically to help people buy their first home. So it would have to be someone that qualifies for their very first home purchase. The great thing about the account is the contributions are tax deductible. So that's similar to RSP, which is a retirement savings plan. And then when the money is eventually withdrawn from the FHSA for a qualifying first home purchase, those withdrawals can be taken out tax-free, so you pay no tax on them, which is awesome. One of the biggest advantages is that you don't have to pay the money back after you use it.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, from the FHSA, which is really awesome. Whereas something like the home buyer's plan, which you mentioned there, you would have to pay that back. The good thing about the home buyer's plan, when you borrow from your RSPs, so that's what you're doing there, is it allows first-time buyers to borrow from the account, and you do have to pay the money back, but it's set up to a limit of $60,000 right now, which is pretty awesome. So you can take that money out and help put it down for a down payment on a house. Really, like I said, the key thing to understand that there is it's essentially a loan to yourself, and the funds do have to be repaid back over a 15-year period into that account. Ultimately, they're both helpful, and they can come with different trade-offs for sure. FHSA offers more flexibility for a first-time home buyer, but somebody who maybe has built up a large RSP account might want to borrow against that. It really just depends on kind of the person, their income, timeline, overall financial picture.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Essentially, there is a strategy and a solution for everyone.
Yeah.
Sometimes they take longer than people would like.
That's
but
right.
You can sit down with somebody like Haley who will draw out a roadmap for you to accomplish your goals, whether they are, you know, long-term home investment or whether it's a big vacation or retirement, wherever you're at in life, you definitely should seek professional assistance. My next question is about debt and credit scores, and we've talked a lot about that on this show. How do debt and credit scores really impact first-time buyers, and what mistakes do you often see people making?
Yeah, good question. Debt and credit, they play a big role in home buying purchase process, but they're often misunderstood. Credit scores will actually help lenders assess how reliable someone has handled borrowing money in the past, which can be very helpful if you have a good credit score. while existing debt can affect how much flexibility someone has in their budget moving forward. So one common misconception that I see is that having no credit is better than having some, which isn't the case. Lenders do like to see the history of responsible use, such as paying bills on time and keeping balance manageable. For really, really young people out there, first kind of step would be putting things in your own name, bills, like phone bills, get your car insurance in your own name. Those are all really good first steps for kind of the younger people out there. On the debt side, a mistake I see fairly often is people taking on new debt right before buying things like financing a car or furniture or other large purchases.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. If the goal is to buy the home, don't go and accumulate a whole bunch of new debt right before purchase. It's really going to impact you in the long run. It's going to be hard on your cash flow, and it's going to affect borrowing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Literally, there's so many things you can see online about like when a realtor's head explodes, which is when you call them for a check-in 2 weeks before closing and say, what's new? And they're like, oh, we bought this new car.
Oh, no.
And your head explodes. And then you have to call the lender and say, is this going to hurt us at all?
Yeah,
because it's scary. And you want to make sure that people are getting into beautiful homes that they've dreamed of, but that they can afford and is not going to cause them financial stress or strain.
Of course.
So buying a home is exciting, but it also changes your cash flow. What lifestyle adjustments should first-time buyers be prepared for?
Yeah, one of the biggest shifts for first-time home buyers realizing that the mortgage payment is only one part of the picture, right? I feel like when people are starting to save for a home and they're looking at purchasing, they're really just focusing on the lump sum down payment, the big cost up front that they have to save for. There are a lot of ongoing expenses that they don't always think about until they're already in the home. So an example would be homeowners are responsible for property taxes, like I mentioned before, and we've chatted about already today. Home insurance, life insurance, which many people don't think about at all, right? Other things like higher utility costs. So if you're coming from renting a place and now you're moving into a home, it's going to cost a lot more to heat the place in the winter as opposed to a tiny apartment. So things like that, that people don't always consider and think about. There's also regular maintenance like furnace servicing, roof repairs, appliances wearing out, small little things that you have to fix up over time. So I would say that those are all of the things and the costs outside of the down payment that people don't really consider and think about when they're purchasing, which is important to look at cash flow and look at your what you're approved for versus what you can actually afford. Those are all the important things to consider, and those are kind of the reasons why, right?
Yeah. We were just very briefly talking about new builds before we jumped on air, and that kind of segues into things that I always remind people when they're purchasing new builds because they don't necessarily always think about them. But the incredible cost of window coverings, because new builds don't come with window coverings.
Yep.
And there's a lot of windows in a new build, and you want privacy, obviously. And everyone wants beautiful blinds, but beautiful blinds are expensive. And so that's an additional cost that I caution people. I also caution people that a lot of new builds don't come with appliances, and a full set of appliances can be quite costly. Also, some do or do not come with paved driveways or sodded yards. It doesn't come with a fenced yard, it doesn't come with a deck, it doesn't come with a finished basement. So the initial price might look attractive, but those are huge costs that are involved with a new build in particular. And that's why I tend to recommend a resale more often, because you do get all of those things as an all-inclusive package with a resale home. And you know, out for debate at the moment, but HST or not, on some elements of it on a new build as well can make it more costly as well as a resale. So moving right through, with interest rates and the market constantly changing, how do you help your clients without trying to time things perfectly? Because it is really hard to say, start a savings plan now, but by the time you're ready to buy in a year and a half, this is what the interest rates are going to look like. How do you manage that?
Yeah, I always encourage clients not to chase what feels like the perfect market condition.
There's no perfect market condition.
Exactly. Because in reality, no one can time the market. Which is a big thing we see even just with investing and investments at the firm and with clients, obviously. Instead, we really focus on planning for a range of scenarios. So we look at things like what happens if interest rates increase, or what if income does change for the individual. Let's say they switch jobs or employers and their income goes down. What if life simply doesn't go exactly as planned, right? Planning for all those unexpecteds. One of the most important things is to understand is that the mortgage pre-approval shows you the maximum, like I said, what you can qualify for, but not necessarily what's best for your long-term comfort. So for someone, they might be approved for a certain amount, but choosing to purchase a home, that's $50,000 less. And keeping the same down payment can significantly reduce their mortgage balance. That can make monthly payments more manageable and provide a buffer if rates or other expenses increase. That's kind of the flexibility that can be incredibly valuable to a client. Planning this way will help people to make decisions that they can live with, and not just for today, but throughout and into the future with market condition changes. You would have saw back in, well, last year when mortgages were coming up for renewal and people had an interest rate of 2.5%, and now their interest rates are jumping, they're doubling that, right? Mm-hmm. And they would have purchased a home that they qualified for before, but now their mortgage payments have doubled and they can't afford it with their cash flow. And so they were all selling their homes, right? It's things like that that you want to plan for and think about and consider. Just because you can afford the home today doesn't mean you'll afford the home in 3 years from now.
Right. Yeah. Because even though interest rates doubled, our incomes didn't.
Correct. Funny how that works.
It's funny, yes. Most people's incomes didn't.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, so I'm a big supporter of this one. I always talk about your financial team and who should be on it, and that this is a team sport, buying a home and even just managing your financial life. So why is it so important for first-time buyers to build a team like a realtor, mortgage professional, and a financial planner instead of going it alone?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I am in the financial planning industry, and I couldn't think about doing it on my own even. it's crazy because something as big as buying a home purchase, but it seems so simple. It touches on so many areas all at once, right? It touches on the legal, it touches on the financial, emotional, looks at risk protection, practicality. You need a realtor, right? You have so many people that kind of can come together and help you to execute this large decision and time in your life. And it's nice to have the support and know that you're doing the right things. It's good to have them and make sure nothing's kind of overlooked. And each professional that we've kind of just touched on and talked about, they all bring a different perspective, and together they can help buyers feel supported rather than them figuring it out all on their own.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's very interesting what I've learned even in the time that I've been in real estate. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, it takes a team. I've learned so much from an incredible group that I work with on a regular basis, be it a mortgage lender, an investment planner, a lawyer.
Yeah.
We just, you know, kind of put our heads together and figure out, okay, what is the best way to approach different scenarios for people? And there's, you know, 9 out of 10 times there is a solution for people. Mm-hmm. And if there isn't, though, you have to have the right group of sensitive professionals as well who can tell people it's just not your time.
Yep.
And here's how to, in the future, make it your time. Mm-hmm. But it's really good to have the right group of people encouraging you and supporting you, and not, you know, I heard a terrible tale once about someone saying to a young couple, "Ugh, you'll never be able to afford a house."
Oh,
first
no.
of all, A, who says that to anyone? Because it's disrespectful and not nice.
Yes.
But B, like, I really hope that young couple went forward in their life and, you know, bought a fantastic house and had a fantastic life, because
yeah.
we all need positive role models in our life.
Yeah.
But I'm, you know, if I need a tune-up in my car, I'm not a mechanic, so I go to a mechanic. If I need, you know, a tune-up on my air conditioning, I call in an expert.
Yep.
So when I need a tune-up in my finances, why wouldn't I call a financial tune-up person?
Yeah.
I'm certain there's a better word for that than what I called them.
I like it, Cherry.
You know, I'm not an accountant. I'm not a finance expert. I'm a realtor, and I'm really good at that.
Yeah.
But I need people also. There's a, like, kind of a question that kind of floats around with people, particularly when they inherit money.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's like reflex when they inherit money is, oh, let's pay off our mortgage.
Right.
Because, you know, they want to just be done with it, which I get it. We all want to just be done with it.
Sure.
But when you actually sit down and do the scenarios and it, you know, say you have a 3.9% interest rate on your mortgage, mm-hmm. but you could make 15% on investments annually, why would you pay off the mortgage?
Yeah, duh.
But nobody ever showed me that
yes.
until, honestly, probably about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's crazy and so simple, though, like you said.
For sure.
But until someone tells you, you have no idea that
yeah.
it's that simple.
Yeah, and that's like where we come into play for sure, is we're the numbers people, so let us do the math behind it.
Right.
And we'll tell you what the optimal solution is. What should you do with that money?
Oh.
But again, it is very dependent on the person. And are you debt averse or not? Like, do you like carrying debt? Well, I'm sure no one likes it.
No one likes it. Some people can tolerate it.
Can you be comfortable? Right, exactly.
More than others. You know, so, when you do the like investment strategy tolerance or whatever it is, and yeah, they rank you as you're like a low, moderate, medium, high, right, something like that. Yeah. My husband is like high risk guy. Like, let's put it on red and see what happens.
Yeah.
But he does really well with it.
Yeah.
And I've always been in the very moderate category. Mm-hmm. And so last time we did a review and I saw how well his investments had performed, I was like, maybe you could crank mine up a little because I want that too.
Yeah.
Not that half his isn't mine anyways.
Yeah.
But you're looking at it thinking, okay, maybe I could tolerate a little bit more, because those are some nice numbers when you look at that kind of math. So, and at the end of the day, it's all just math. It's not even emotion. It's just math, right?
You know what? If you never look at your statement, you trust your advisor and you tuck the statement away, you'll just see the returns when you go in for a review, right, and that's all you need to see.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Okay, we're bringing it in for a landing, which is, this has gone by really quickly, so that's great. If you could give first-time homebuyers just one piece of financial advice before they buy, what would it be?
Mm. Yeah, I'd say don't rush and don't compare your journey to anyone else's. I think the most successful first-time home buyers aren't the fastest ones, but they're the ones who buy in a way that supports their long-term financial health and peace of mind. I think setting goals is a great way to keep motivated and determined, but also don't beat yourself up if, you know, it's not successfully achieved by the time frame you had proposed for yourself. It's always better to be ready than to rush into something.
Yep, I 100% agree. And I can think of, say, the most recent groups of first-time home buyers I've worked with, mm-hmm, and they're all very diverse.
Yeah.
So, for example, I helped a couple buy a house this year who were probably in their late 30s. They already had 3 children. They were both professionals. They had been renting for years, mm-hmm, and they finally realized their kids were at an age where they wanted to, you know, put the roots in the right school area.
Yeah.
They wanted to have a big backyard for them. They got themselves pre-approved, but it wasn't easy. He was a teacher of some sort, and as teachers are, they're not always on full-time contracts.
Yep.
And so when you're trying to get approved for a mortgage, you don't always get approved unless you have a full-time contract in hand, mm-hmm, which, of course, during the time when they were trying to buy, he did not. So it got a little bit complicated. Ultimately, they got it accomplished, and they've now moved into this beautiful home in the West End of Kingston that I'm really happy for them about.
Yeah.
Another person that I worked with happens to be military. He was also in his mid-30s, and he bought a home in Trenton.
Yep.
He had rented forever because he was military, and when you really don't know where you're going to be living in the next 2 or 3 years, didn't ever want to put down roots. He's now on a more or less permanent assignment in Trenton.
Mm-hmm.
So he bought himself a lovely home as well. Funny story, I was actually just checking in with him this morning. And in military world, you arrive often very early before your stuff arrives.
Oh,
so he actually closed on his house at least a week and a half ago. And I was doing a check-in with him this morning. And he said, well, my stuff's arriving today. And I said, what are you doing? And the military does, you know, pay for support if they wanted to stay in an Airbnb or if they wanted to stay in a hotel. They do support them in that way. But he's like, nah, just bunking in, camping down. Maybe he has a mattress with him. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, very different point in his journey. And then another couple that I recently worked with as well used actually the City of Kingston home ownership plan.
Okay. Yeah.
So you have to buy a certain dollar value worth of house, and they're not, you know, the $1 million houses.
Mm-hmm.
They're more modest homes and they often need a little bit of TLC, but if you have a very handy person in your partnership, that really helps.
Yep.
And this couple was literally the only way they were able to get into home ownership because mm-hmm. the City of Kingston home ownership grant supported them. And there's, you know, they got into a lovely home. It's a modest 2-bedroom on Highway 15. They've been in it for a little while. They're already kind of spying their next move up home,
wow,
which is often the case in the life cycle of home ownership. So, you know, you buy your first home so that you can get in, build some equity, get your legs sturdy and figure out how you're going to manage a home. And then, you know, a lot of people, you know, have a child or two and realize that they're going to need a bigger home.
Yeah.
And then it's interesting though, because you'll be in your move up home that isn't often even the forever home. And then the forever home is probably like the 20-year home that you're in. And then you get to the other side of it, much like myself and my husband. Now we're like, this is a lot of home. Do we even need this home?
Yeah.
So there is like a full life cycle on home ownership of how people approach things. But I love the early days of the process. Like nothing lights my heart up more because I imagine them all being my children when, you know, particularly or often, you know, the girl will stand in the house and say, oh my God, I can't wait to fill this house with babies.
Oh,
and you can just see them
so
gushing
sweet,
with love, which is so beautiful. So I get to be a part of that. You get to be a part of that, which is beautiful.
Awesome.
I really, really appreciate you being on the show today and all of the advice that you have offered people. You have a ton of advice. I would love for you to once again tell people how they could reach out to you if they wanted some additional guidance.
Yeah, if anyone ever has any questions or wants to reach out, you can get me at my email. It's haley.clements@ig.ca. You can also find me online if you just search my name and IG Wealth Management. And yeah, if you ever have any questions, feel free to reach out. Always happy to help people out where I can.
Perfect. Well, with that, I wish you and all of our listeners a great day finding their way home.
CFRC is stoked to partner with KPP Concerts on an awesome summer lineup. On June 27th, be sure to catch Long Range Hustle and Psycho Billy legends Reverend Horton Heat on June 28th. On July 3rd, check out alt country legend Fred Eaglesmith, followed by folk punk legend Billy Bragg on July 5th. Emo is alive and well on July 8th with Arms Length and Mo Kenny come to town on July 9th. Hip-hop pioneer Souls of Mischief are here on July 21st, and we'll get some hardcore action with Spaced on July 23rd. Almond Monica brings Arabic Jazz to Kingston on August 7th, and finally, August 9th, you can see Lucero Ben Nichols. For tickets and full information on these and other awesome shows, visit kppconcerts.com.
Alone again, wondering where you have been. Your lonely voice calls across the starlit coast, reaching out to be seen. She cries your name three times again. She cries. And there's a wasteland in your soul. The burnt out trees will leave you cold. Living out in a deal. She cried.
Yeah. That was The Dead Tongues, the music project of North Carolina native Ryan Gustafson, with the title track to his 2020 album Transmigration Blues. The show began with British singer-songwriter Beth Orton, an artist who essentially created her own subgenre known as Folktronica, a blend of folk music and electronica, the latter of those that grew out of her music collaborations with early 90s dance floor electronic artists like William Orbit and the Chemical Brothers. We heard an example of what Folktronica sounds like with the song She Cries Your Name, a song co-written by William Orbit, which is on her 1996 sophomore album Trailer Park. Hello everyone, and welcome to No Chords Barred, a 90-minute show that features music by mainstream, independent, and alternative artists all mixed together to show that quality music is not the sole domain of mainstream labels. Now along the way, it's my hope that you'll discover some artists with whom you're not familiar that you'll start to follow, since local exposure for many that you'll hear on this show is a very rare commodity, if one at all. Case in point is the next singer who is quite well known in her native England, but far less so here in North America. From her 2016 debut EP, The Stars Look Down, this is Rose Betts with Orange Trees.
Dead flowers fall from the orange trees. There's smoke in the air, dust on the leaves. Put on your shoes in the dead of night and follow the moon, and I will find you. Wait for me by the orange trees. Oh, wait for me by the orange trees. 'Cause I'm holding back the horses, but I can't. my feet. They smell of love and endless fire. My heart is full, but my hands are weak, and they cannot keep the birds from flying. But wait for me by the orange trees. Oh, wait for me by the orange trees.
Yeah. get the sun on which one of the stars yawn. I ain't afraid to hold the gun if it leads me to the safe. Tell the fellas at the moor that I'm headed back on tour. Gonna put them boys to work. Wipe your hands and wash your face. I'm feeling every part. I'm speaking what I know. Something is anything I want. Is anything I want. Just so my children get spoiled when they get old. They can fuck up all they want and blame it all on their dad. So they can watch me go to work, fall asleep on the couch. They'll say I wanna be you, but I don't wanna be that. They'll say I wanna be you, but I don't.
Son of could ever do. But I can't teach you, I can't teach it to you. Look out, kid, trust your mind, but you can't trust it every time. You know it plays tricks on you, and it don't give a damn if you are happy or you're sad. But if you've lost it, don't feel bad, 'cause it's alright to be sad.